mostly kind of, it's about a paper which I wrote with Nimani, which is for certain .04.1955. Then I'm going to tell you about how to construct another chart in a gravity interpretational picture, which is which we named another long charges, and also tell me if you can't read my handwriting. And then I'm going to talk about dimensional reduction. To extract black hole charges, which is kind of the main, well, a very useful tool, which is a big part of our paper. And then actually I'm going to this kind of more or less like an introduction bit, and then I'm going to talk about entropy of black holes. And do a definition, and then talk about the first law, and then I talk about what somebody called Pedro Silva called the quantum statistical relation, which is kind of the first law for a strong black hole. And if I have time, I will talk about the entropy function, which is kind of a tool invented by Chersen some time ago for studying for extracting charges of external black holes and extracting the entropy, but it used not to work for some class of black holes, which was the main part of our paper, but I'm not going to talk too much about it. Anyway, so why we study external black holes? I mean, one motivation is that they are supersymmetric black holes. Why do we want to study them? Because these are basically black holes which saturate the BDS bond. And the idea of that is that they are relevant for entropy. For entropy counting and counting of microstates, which is basically a tool to, in some sense, theoretically test any theory of quantum gravity such as string theory. And the idea behind that is that the number of states is protected by supersymmetry. And then the other important part is that external black holes have a decoupling limit,
and and satisfy the attractor mechanism. So the idea behind that is that there is a near horizon geometry which exactly satisfies Einstein's equations, so it's not only an approximation, but kind of to orders as a solution to the Einstein equations, and that near horizon geometry is given uniquely in terms of the charges of the black hole, independent of how you embed it. So you can put it in ADS or flat space or whatever, and it doesn't matter. The near horizon geometry is always the same, and also, the cute thing is that if you have a microscopic theory, well, say in general, for any theory, it's quite often easier to find this near horizon geometry, which you'll figure out in a second why that is the case. And so now I'm going to tell you about what they are. So external black holes are basically black holes with zero surface gravity? Any question? But, yeah. I'm telling you that now. They saturate the extremality condition. The extremality condition, which I'll tell you in a second. So basically, I mean, the kind of one definition is that they have zero surface gravity. And so basically, they have zero temperature. Yes. Well, I'm not going to talk in any sense about supersymmetric black holes right now. Kind of.
So does the term extreme black holes apply to the ordinary black hole?
Yes, basically.
Massive
holes. Yeah, basically, BPS black holes are like a subset of extreme black holes.
So is there a condition you can apply to an ordinary short shell geometry that would make it look like an extreme black hole?
No. Well, charge washout. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you in a second. Well, actually, I can tell you now. So basically, this condition gives you basically it's one condition which you can rewrite in terms of the parameters of a black hole that the mass in terms of the charge and the angular momentum is this. So basically, that's the extremality condition. For an ordinary like four-dimensional black hole, that's just m equals q with appropriate factors. So basically, it saturates the extremality bound. So another way to see it is that normally a charged black hole has two horizons, and they coincide for an extremal black hole. And so the cute feature of them is that the near horizon geometry is ABS2 cross something d minus 2, and that something is usually a default sphere. So in some sense, it's ABS2 cross SD minus 2. And that constrained near horizon geometry makes it much easier to find solutions only for the near horizon geometry without having the full embedding into the space time. Which kind of this talk is about, that you know, the whole embedding doesn't really matter that much, and actually the near horizon geometry is the important part. So then I'm going to tell you what so then I'm going to tell you about what charges of black holes are about. So basically, in general, we talk about the mass, the charge, the angular momentum, and kind of the mass is not really, in some sense, it's not really a charge. And like you see for extremal black holes, it's anyway fixed in terms of the extremality condition. And then you have also the entropy of the black hole. And those are given in terms of integrals at infinity. So the mass is some integral at infinity of tau d psi d hat, where that is like the time I can connect at infinity. With some factor, I think it's there very well. No, it's there very well. And the charge, we know it's four times integral at infinity star f. And the angular momentum is given as an integral at infinity. Which is star d psi
sky hat of whichever angle you're talking about. Those are the so-called Pullman formulae. And the problem is you need to evaluate them usually at infinity, and you can't evaluate them at the horizon. So they're defined at infinity. And then there's also the entropy, which was shown by Ward for non-extreme black holes to be defined as an integral over the bifurcation surface. So you don't have a bifurcation surface for extreme black holes. That's a point. Basically, So it's the integral of the inertia charge with respect to the Killing vector, which generates the horizon. And that's kappa over 4 pi times the entropy. And then we have the second problem. I mean, first, we don't have a bifurcation surface for extreme black holes. And secondly, we have zero surface gravity. That causes the problem. So that's not applicable for extreme black holes. So now let me briefly explain how we are there any questions?
Yeah. What do you mean zero surface gravity?
Mathematically, you have the definition that d psi equals kappa psi. That's the definition of the surface gravity, and that is the Killing vector which generates the horizon. Basically, it's zero temperature in some sense.
Right. So it's not a flat neck.
No. It's like the in some sense an extrinsic curvature. That's no. It's not a flat neck. I mean, you know that the T and orbit are given by the LES too, so it's not flat. So basically, it means zero temperature in some sense.
If you were at that horizon, you would still fall in.
Yeah.
Even if it has so-called zero gravity.
No, zero surface gravity is the energy it requires to move something from the horizon to infinity.
So basically, if you want
to take zero energy to go to infinity.
So basically, if you have a...
So then you don't fall in.
So basically, if you have a probe at the horizon and you have somebody pulling out there with the balance, then the surface gravity corresponds to the acceleration of that observer, of that test particle near the horizon.
So then you shouldn't fall in.
Well, that's measured with respect to infinity and not kind of locally. I mean, you would need to, you would need to say, well, kappa horizon minus kappa horizon, RH plus delta H to kind of test where that falls in. In some sense, the temperature is like a gauge-dependent quantity. So it's defined that, in terms of the gauge quantity, it's defined that like the surface gravity at infinity is zero. So that's why it's with respect to embedding in flat space time. And that was kind of a paper by Ward and Lee how to construct inertia charges corresponding to diffeomorphism symmetries. So I'm just going to tell you the method, which is firstly, you write a variation of the metric of the Lagrangian in the following form, which is the equation of motion times the variation of the dynamical fields. plus some plus some exact which is normally useful that way if we do the equations of motion. And then you write it roughly variation the other way around. So you write the variation as d psi l equals dot dot psi l d psi dot l, which is just the action of the diffeomorphism on the on a kind of volume flow, like the branch is kind of a volume flow. It's like it's a default. And so then you can define the current, which is that's from theta of delta psi. Well, I'm not going to write it out. Minus psi dot l, and you can check that if the equations of motion are satisfied, e dot phi is zero, then that guarantees you that dl dj equals zero, so it's a conserved current.
And then you can write j as some you write j as some exact from. And so let me make just two observations, which is I mean that's kind of that is very nice, but it doesn't help us in the picture that we want to compute the charges of the black holes on the horizon. So we still, if we evaluate that that charge on different type of surfaces, it will be different. However, there are a few cases, which is first it's the case of a vanishing current, then naively the integral over any two hypersurfaces vanishes by Gauss law. I mean, that's there are a few subtleties, but that's kind of usually the case. And examples for that are if L equals zero and psi is killing. Do you know what's a killing vector? Good. No objection means yes. Or is there no? Okay, what's the definition of a killing vector? I knew it when I wrote the paper. Is this the derivative of so and then there's a second case where psi is one of the periodic killing vectors. So basically the angular direction. And then you can also show, which I don't have time to do, that uh, this condition, well, yeah, this condition applies. For non-compact Killing vectors, non-periodic or non-compact Killing vectors, however, that is not the case. So basically, in this case, the right-hand side becomes something like the integral psi dot L for, in general, for Killing vectors. So we see that if psi lies within the hypersurface, that vanishes. And so there are a few more issues, which is if I add boundary terms to the action, then only the non-compact, the charges corresponding to the non-compact directions will change, but for example, the angular momenta will stay the same. And then the second issue is that this condition applies only if you have, if all the forms involved are globally well defined. So one example where they came out a paper recently is black rings with magnetic charge. And so if you have magnetic charge, like the gauge fields are not globally well defined, and then you run into trouble. But I'm not going to talk more about it in detail. So just to give us, to give you kind of the tool how to find those charges, is that the idea is you write the currents as some exact form plus the equations of motion times whatever I call them fi, which are some functions of the some functionals of the fields, and then you can throw away this bit and you're left with the exact form. I mean, that's just rewriting a nasty expression which you get from that definition up there. So it's like an, depending on how complicated, like afternoon type exercise. Okay. J is a current, and kind of the important condition which we want to have here is that condition which applies to vanishing current or that case. Because then we can rewrite things which we define at infinity on the horizon, which is very nice. And however, in the most general case, those don't apply, and then you have just conserved currents. So I'm just going to give you kind of a rough cartoon-like figure. I was being silly. I'm going to give you a rough cartoon-like figure of how those charges look like. So if you have an Einstein-Hilbert term, it becomes something like star d xi hat. And if you have any kind of gauge field type action, so basically like F squared or, well, how to write it, F dash star F, or like a transimons type term, H wedge, F, A wedge F wedge F. We did the paper in five dimensions, which is why you see the five dimensional one here. Those give usually a contribution or of the form of IKA times delta L delta DA. This is kind of supposed to be understood as a cartoon-like form. Factors are missing and so on. Are there any questions for that part? Is that as in I've lost you, or as in you can't be bothered, that's too easy, or Okay, I must be a good lecturer then. yeah. The area. I mean, well, I mean, depends on which killing vector you're talking about. I mean, you see, for example, it gives you the Kummer integral for the angular momentum, for example. And on the horizon, yes, I mean, it gives you, suppose you have only Einstein-Hilbert, it gives you, it gives you that relation, and then it depends. So for an extreme black hole, that's actually vanishing. Like if you evaluate it on the horizon exactly. So then kind of I'm going to talk briefly about the dimensional reduction issue. I mean, we kind of, I don't know whether you can see it from this picture, but so if you want to compute an angular momentum, basically all you do here is you compute a conserved charge corresponding to a Kidding vector, and you know that in angular momentum is kind of a charge corresponding to a U1 symmetry, which you can see from the fact that so basically, if you turn on, if you have a sphere, you have like an, for an SD sphere, you have an, what is it? It's a, D minus one, am I right? Symmetry, the isometries, maybe it's SOD minus one isometries. So, and if you turn on angular momentum, kind of that sphere kind of gets deformed. So imagine, you know, you spin your soccer ball quickly enough and it becomes a disc. Those kind of break down to their U1 factors, D minus one over two, either the, you know, next high or next lower one if it's odd. And so then you see kind of you're left with U1 symmetries. So the question is, can you compute the U1 symmetries in a more trivial way than going through the Noether procedure? And the answer is yes, you can do that. The answer is how to do that is just to do a dimensional reduction and compute Kaluza-Klein charges. And so I'm just going to write down the ansatz just that you have seen it, which goes like you have a metric here, and then you have you define your Kaluza-Klein gauge fields, and your Kaluza-Klein scalars, and here you also get a contribution basically, which is b dot h dot b of that kind of form. I mean, that's just kind of a cartoon picture, but if you know that, you kind of need to be careful that you decouple the U1 symmetries, because, well, in general, you talk about a theory with U1 charges in it, like Einstein-Maxwell theory. And then you need to be careful to have the right ansatz for the gauge fields. And so basically, they give you scalar fields. So the lowercase indices are kind of just indices for scalar fields. And they give you a set of Kaluza client scalars. And in the non-compact directions, they give you the gauge field plus some contribution which comes from the proper decoupling of those U1s which is there. So I'm not going to go through the computations. I mean, you can look it up. Well, my space is, no, I mean, ADS, well, it's not really compact. You do Kaluza client reduction on this sphere. So basically, I mean, I should have said that more clearly, kind of, you take out the appropriate directions where you have angular momenta turned on, and those are then the compact directions, and they give you the U1 gauge fields here, and then you just go to the through the like ordinary Noether procedure to give you U1 charges, and well, there are only two angular momenta in 5 dimensions. So the number of angular momenta just the number of angular momenta is d minus 2/2. I don't know. It's kind of the next high or the next. Somebody must have read. Well, anyway, kind of roughly. In 5 dimensions, you have 3, and in 4 dimensions, you have 1, and then you can figure out how exactly it is. And so basically, then you do the identification that the ordinary Noether charge of your KK gauge field is the angular momentum. Is the angular momentum, and that's just the same as the Noether wall charge of whichever direction you were talking about. Well, I used improper notation. That's proper notation. You can do that identification. You can check it for every example, and it's true. String theorist induction. And okay, so kind of one more thing is that normally if you compute Noether charges, well, you need to go through the Noether procedure, but for gauge fields where you have no terms like where you have not the gauge field occurring explicitly in the action, you know that the charge is just given as it's just given in that form. I mean, it doesn't matter which powers of F you have, but it should be kind of explicitly gauge independent action. And that is basically what Sen used to define his entropy function, which is kind of a tool to parameterize the KK reduction kind of for those particular symmetries, and then compute those charges corresponding to the angular momentum. However, that goes wrong if you have something like a wedge F wedge F, because there you have explicit gauge dependence. So those kind of terms you can typically transform under a under gauge transformation, those terms typically transform as d lambda times times some exact form, which itself is exact, which is a boundary term. And then you can do in the dimensional reduced theory. So if you start off with a five-dimensional transformance term, it doesn't work. But it turns out that after doing the dimensional reduction, the transformance term splits up in a nice way into the KK scalars and the KK gauge fields, that you can add a boundary term to the action. So let's call that, I know I used theta already, let's call it capital phi. Well, kind of in the paper, which like five-dimensional supergravity is very exciting for string theorists. And there were lots of black hole solutions, and it's typically not non-trivial to find the embedding, the full space time embedding, and so that's where those methods are most useful.
So these are
yeah, I mean, kind of. Well, I mean, that's the neurohorizon geometry. So in 5D, you have R minus F star R minus F wedge. F H star F plus that transformance term. That's the theory which we were considering. So basically, then you can add roughly something like delta. You can do an integration by parts of this boundary term then, and so in the dimensional reduced theory you can add something which is something dependent on that form. You can add that to the boundary, and what happens is that under the dimensional reduction, that one became something like A wedge dA wedge dA. And so what that does, it kind of makes that into an F. And those are not gauge dependent. It takes out one of the derivatives and keeps the other derivative, but you can do that only in the dimensional reduced theory. And then that condition applies. Okay, I'm running badly out of time, but that's okay. That's good. So entropy. I'm going to skip some stuff which we did in our paper, which is the most wishy-washy part, but now I have a good excuse to skip it, because I'm running out of time. So basically, if you add those kind of boundary terms, the inertia charge corresponding to the timeline killing vector on the horizon looks something like star d xi hat plus q times psi dot a minus j psi dot b, where b is the KK gauge field. And so a second ingredient which I need to tell you is to get to get a different motivation than what I script, is that there was a paper by my boss and some collaborator, Jacobson, I believe, that you can write the entropy as the integral. Well, you can rewrite the Wald formula as the integral anywhere over the horizon of the Noether charge, provided that those terms be well defined on the bifurcation surface. And if you work it out in practice, that condition that those terms be well defined on the bifurcation surface is nothing else than those terms should vanish. And so basically what they motivate with that is some gauge fixing that you fix A equals zero and B equals zero on the horizon. And so then that's just, let's call it Q graph. So that's just that gravitational contribution. And then you can do fancy things in ADS2, which is you don't really need to define it on the horizon. You define it anywhere on any radius. Put that as a function of radius. I mean, you can evaluate it basically anywhere. And you have that as a function of radius too. And then the cute thing is that away from the horizon, that doesn't vanish, and that doesn't vanish. And it turns out that the entropy is just integral Q psi over kappa at r not equals to zero. And you can take the limit of that one of limit r going to zero. Any question? Surface gravity. And actually, that limit is well defined as that's actually it's an invariant in the new horizon geometry, so you can evaluate it anywhere in the new horizon geometry, which is what you expect because in ADS2, I mean in ADS space, kind of ADS space is supposed to be the same at any point in space time. So it would be silly if you would be able to compute a physical need to compute a physical quantity at some specific r equals zero. I'm going to skip how to do the first law. Basically, I just tell you the idea of it. So in the first law, you don't consider the this dodgy gauge fixing. You just say, well, okay, this part gives you kappa s, and that is the angular frequency, and that is the that's the electric potential, and then you do a variation of the left-hand side, the variation of the right-hand side, and then basically kind of you relate that to infinity. So basically you have a compute the integral of that one on the horizon minus the integral of that one at infinity. That is something. And well, then you go through some mathematical toolkit, and basically what happens is you use a lot the ADS2 symmetries in the near horizon geometry, and that tells you something like you define the mass as a function of r. So basically, you evaluate that one at some horizon, and that is just kappa of r. Plus phi of r delta q plus omega of r delta j. And so basically, then you can take the r going to limit zero, and then this term disappears, and those are just the ones computed at the horizon. That becomes the proper mass of the black hole, and you're left with the bit of the first law which you expect in the extremal limit. However, kind of a thing which sucks is that those are all gauge-dependent statements with respect to infinity. And then you can do a different thing, which is very cute to show in detail. So I encourage you to look at my paper, and which is that if you consider the integral form of the first law, so what you do is you do the integral over some hypersurface in the near horizon geometry of the of q psi t minus the integral at infinity of q psi t. That is some number. Actually, that's a cute thing, which I'll show you just in a second. It is integral at infinity q plus some number, and basically that gives you the mass that gives you the Euclidean action of the black hole minus the minus or plus, doesn't matter, minus the mass. And then on the left hand side, you have still the stuff there. Actually, the important thing, that's kappa of r, kappa of r factor here. And then you consider the limit of r going to zero. You know that this guy vanishes at r equals to zero. Those guys don't vanish. You know that kappa of r vanishes. So if you want to have a well-defined Euclidean action for your black hole, which you expect kind of from the microscopic theory, then that tells you that m is some function of q and j. Have you seen that before? Yes, that's just the extremality condition, which comes out of the condition that I be well defined. And if that extremality condition is true, then what happens is that you'll find that the entropy is just given, which is my last statement. So actually, because it's the last formula, I want to get it right. Is just minus 2 pi times the electric field in the near horizon geometry, which is somehow it follows from the ADS2 symmetry that E is something like phi over phi of r over kappa. E of, where was I? EH times Q plus HH I JI, and where H is basically H equals dB, so dB, so it's kind of the it's the field strength corresponding to the KK gauge field. And plus star integrated over any hypersurface in the near horizon geometry of the action, which is a very cute formula, because we see it's gauge independent. There's no phi. It has no relation whatsoever to the to what happens at infinity, because we don't have mass in there, and we don't have omega and phi, which were gauge dependent quantities defined with respect to infinity. We don't have kappa there anymore in there, which is in some sense also a gauge dependent quantity with respect to infinity. And that's a very easy formula to compute compared to what we had earlier, the whole Northwald construction procedure. And that formula in some particular parameterization was invented by Sen some time ago, who had proven it in some proving it that way. And well, it's a cute formula for the black hole entropy of extremal black holes. And so basically kind of the story to take away from that is that the relevant quantities in the decoupling limit, where you consider the near horizon geometry only, are gauge independent quantities. And there are E and H and Q and J and the entropy, rather than quantities like the potential and the angular frequency and the temperature, which would be dependent on where you need to evaluate it in the ADS2, and that would be sick anyway. So I'll stop there.
Quick question or comment? Yeah. Then we're going to meet. Let's meet again at 5 after 11.